Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Okay, this is such a common thing, right? Having that back pain during pregnancy. Now, another thing that we need to understand is going to support us during pregnancy is what we're putting in our bodies nutritionally and what our body is actually using. That is so incredibly important. A lot of times we can be taking these supplements that claim all these things but aren't really supporting us the way that they should be. And I am very, very serious when it comes to what I put in my own body and what I talk about and suggest to my friends, family, and anyone who reaches out about what I recommend they put in their body as well. And so I actually had found needed, went to my RD, made sure I got the sign off that I needed, and I have been loving it. And it's really supported my pregnancy journey. I mean, you get so exhausted, right? And sometimes, especially in first trimester, I was like not wanting anything nutritious. I was just basically eating bread, getting calories at least, but I wasn't really, I mean, vegetables, things that are healthy just didn't sound good to me. And so I knew, but I was still supporting my body because I was taking needed supplements. And here's another thing. I don't eat fish, and I know that omega-3 is so incredibly important for the body. And so again, that's what I'm using with needed. And the other thing, they have so much stuff. I mean, I'm telling you, if you feel like you are depleted in iron, they have iron supplements. If you feel like you want some probiotic support, they have prenatal probiotic support. Like, they have everything that you can need. And beyond that, if you feel like, well, my husband needs a little bit support too, they have a sperm supplement support and they have a men's multivitamin. They have everything that you need to really support your journey from trying to conceive, pregnancy, and postpartum. And I just cannot say enough good things because of how they're formulated at optimal levels rather than bare minimum levels. And they really go above and beyond with third-party testing, testing every single batch to ensure their safest product because they understand who this is going to as well. And that's why I trust needed. And if you're like, I can't do pills, they have powders. Like, they will cover what you need based on where you are. And I cannot push enough how much nutrition is needed during motherhood to help support us. Like, our body is going through so much. So I'd highly recommend head over to thisisneeded.com. Use code OPTIMAL and you get 20% off of your first order. That's THISNEEDED.com and use code OPTIMAL and you get 20% off your first order.
So today's a fun topic because Jen's pregnant and as she moves more into pregnancy, it's fun to just talk about some of the things that she's going through and try to relate that to things that are so common in people who go through pregnancy, whether during pregnancy or postpartum. And today we want to talk about back pain, which is a very prevalent issue for people during pregnancy.
I mean, low back pain is such a common complaint. And we can see from this one study that we have pulled up, low back pain during pregnancy, it's estimated that about 50% of pregnant women complain of some sort of back pain at some point in pregnancy or during the postpartum period. And there was actually another study as well that said that even though we're not specifically talking about pelvic pain, I mean, it's all related into the back, right? Pregnancy-related pelvic pain, or PPGP, is common and affects up to 20% of pregnancies between 20 and 30 weeks of gestation and up to 50% of pregnancies before 20 weeks gestation, which, you know, then happens pretty... Mm-hmm. That's a very prevalent and high percentage of people who are going to be experiencing pain pretty early on in pregnancy.
Which to some degree, those numbers seem a little bit low to me because I feel like
you hear
half
it a
of
lot.
People, like I feel like you hear it from a lot more people. But I think we want to talk a little bit about why. Like, why are we starting to feel these pains other than the obvious, which I guess the obvious, like you're pregnant, starts to explain a lot of different things. Like you have this growing baby in your uterus, uterus is growing. And one major thing that does is it shifts your whole center of gravity. Mm-hmm. And it shifts your whole center of gravity forward a bit with that belly growing out forward. And that does a bunch of different things to our mechanics, to our standing posture, to just our body's ability to move in the rib cage, in the diaphragm. So we'll dive, let's dive into that a little bit.
Interrupting the episode really quickly to talk about pregnancy. Now, something that is so crucial and I don't think is talked about enough is getting electrolytes during pregnancy. Now, you might think, but I already have swelling. I already have all these symptoms that pop up. I'm having cramping. That is why you need electrolytes, especially if you're trying to really be, you know, conscious of what you're putting in your body. You're not eating out a lot. You're not getting a lot of processed food. You need salt. This is what is going to support your body and all the electrolytes that Element has. L-M-N-T is really going to help support you in pregnancy. They have a full article on how it supports in pregnancy, but I've seen so many people tell me, and myself included, that when I include it more, there is less cramping. There is less swelling. Like, I've had people tell me their weeks 36 and in previous pregnancies, they are already getting so much swelling in their feet and ankles. And now they're shocked that there's no swelling in their body. So I'm telling you, it makes a really big difference, not only in pregnancy, but in everyone. I've had my mother-in-law tell me as well, she feels a difference when she doesn't take Element and how much more exhausted and foggy she is throughout the day. So again, this is something for everyone, but something you can still include during pregnancy and something I really included in postpartum. I mean, breastfeeding takes it out of you. So I highly recommend, if you haven't yet, try Element. We're going to have it linked up below, but that is drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelment.com/optimal. And this is going to, when you purchase, you're going to get a free sample pack so you can explore all the different flavors that Element has. And I'm telling you, it tastes amazing and it's going to help you to hydrate more throughout the day. And you're just going to feel the difference once you include it. So I'm just going to remind you, pregnant mamas, postpartum, make sure you're getting your Element in. Yeah, I mean, your body is always looking to seek, you know, its lowest energy form. Like, how, wherever it's moving, I'm just going to follow, right? So if, yeah, like, for example, if my head is going forward into a screen, I'm just going to round forward because that's what feels comfortable for my upper back then,
yeah,
right? So the same thing, if my belly is starting to shift forward, it's probably very common for my pelvis to then anteriorly tilt and kind of shift forward into, yep, my hips. And I'm going to get a little bit more of that forward pressure. And then what ends up happening sometimes is we notice a little bit of external rotation of those legs.
Because when our pelvis tilts anteriorly, technically, if we don't move our legs, they're more internally rotated.
Mm-hmm.
And that might feel uncomfortable. And like you said, our body wants to seek that homeostasis.
Right. So then you start getting into that waddling pattern of pregnancy, especially later on in pregnancy, right? Where you feel like you're waddling back and forth, your feet are turned out, your hips are forward. But what this does when we have external rotation of those feet and those hips going forward, we're putting a lot more pressure into that low back area, into, yep, that SI and that pelvic region. And so it's then going to be more common that we're going to start to feel more symptoms because the brain is registering whatever we're putting on a habitual basis. So if now all of a sudden I'm shifting my center of mass and I'm putting more pressure in a certain area, your brain is going to be registering that as like, oh, that's new, that's uncomfortable. Along with all the hormones and different ligament changes that we're getting, yeah, as well, that's also causing shifting and movement. That's good that we want, but it can register into the brain as this is different and, mm-hmm, and we can feel pain.
And a few other kind of going off of that and anatomical things that are happening with the growing baby, it gives our rib cage and our diaphragm less space to move.
Mm-hmm.
So we almost start to get this forced anterior flare of the rib cage, and our diaphragm doesn't want to descend as much because then it's going to be pushing into the baby and an area that we already don't have enough space. And so we aren't able to get as full of breaths. We aren't able to compress our rib cage as much to do true diaphragmatic breathing. So we might seek out breath in other ways by breathing through our upper rib cage,
mm-hmm,
which is going to contribute to other things as well, maybe neck tension, upper trap tension, but also is a more stressful breathing pattern. Mm-hmm. It's something that's going to activate our sympathetic nervous system a little more versus parasympathetic. So that adds into this whole kit and caboodle of adding stress. When we have more stress or in a more sympathetic state, our perception of pain is a little bit elevated. And you mentioned the pelvis a little bit, and just in general, we're having these ligamentous changes. When you brought up the stats that 50% of people feel pelvic pain prior to the 20-week mark, that kind of makes sense because that's when relaxin, this hormone, is really going into effect to give all these ligaments a little bit more laxity. And again, people start to try and say, oh, your pelvis is unstable, which is also something not that true. We want to start to strike down. That's, we see more as like harmful language because people are thinking, oh, my pelvis is unstable, I can't move. When in reality, even with these this ligamentous laxity, our pelvis is super stable.
Well, and that's what I want to talk about, because there was actually a cool study done in 2022 about reframing beliefs and instilling facts for contemporary management of pregnancy related to pelvic girdle pain. And I love this paper because it says common narrative perpetuated in the clinic and in medical care in general include misleading statements about pain being normal in pregnancy, as if there is nothing to prevent or treat it, the belief that pain will immediately stop after delivery, and that pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain is due to poor posture or alignment. And these all create a false belief of fragility and inevitably of pain. You know, and so this is why it's so important to understand pain is complex. We've brought up some biomechanical stuff that's happening in the body, but we have to even look beyond that when it comes to pregnancy-related pain. Are you now doing less activities with your friends because you are preparing for baby, or you just, they're doing activities that you don't feel comfortable doing pregnant, so you're not maybe getting as much social interaction as you normally did before, or you feel like you've been told by your provider, don't lift more than 20 pounds, so now you're not working out, or now you're not doing certain things. And so all of this mental stress and mental state like compounds and adds to the experience that we feel in pain. And so this is so important that we take this in, especially if you're super nauseous in the very beginning, you're not eating the things that you normally would, like you're uncomfortable with sleep, you're not sleeping well, maybe you have insomnia. Like, this all increases our perception of pain experience within the body. So we have to understand that it's not just postural related and it's not just alignment related. There's so much more there. Of course, we want to look at that and we want to say, okay, what we can do, which we're going to talk about, but we also have to take in these other factors and acknowledge them. And the moment you start acknowledging things that could be contributing, I'm telling you, the pain levels are going to start to decrease.
And so everything that we've listed off kind of combines into this perfect soup of biomechanical, physiological, psychological, and social components that, you know, are like a perfect environment for pain to start to develop in the low back and the pelvis, really anywhere. So like you said, what do we do? And I think you brought up one thing that a lot of people hear when they start going to their OB appointments is like, okay, you're pregnant now, so for exercise, don't lift more than 20 pounds, or something to that narrative of like, now you're pregnant, so stop exercising or don't exercise as much. And that, if that's the first thing that you start to hear in your OB appointments, I would have a ton of pause about how that person is going to consult with you and guide you through the pregnancy, especially if you're someone who's already active, already lifting, already exercising. Because the newest guidelines or most up-to-date guidelines from ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
So not just what we're saying.
was put out in 2015. And there's a few different points, but some of the main ones are women with uncomplicated pregnancy should engage in an aerobic and strength conditioning exercise routine. Done. Pretty straightforward, right? You should. This is not like, oh, you can, but you should be doing this. A moderate intensity exercise program, they say equivalent to 13 to 14 on the Borg scale, which is a scale of 6 to 20. But essentially, that's meant to mimic your heart rate. So 13 to 14 is 130 to 140 beats per minute in your heart rate, which it takes, people a good amount of activity to get there, for at least 20 to 30 minutes a day or 150 minutes per week, which is similar to the regular recommendations for the average person, which I also love to see that. Physical activity in pregnancy has minimal risk and is beneficial to most women. Some modifications may be necessarily, making sure you do consult with your OB as you're doing these things to make sure that none of the things you're doing are landing outside of guidelines, or, you know, might, for some reason, you might have different restrictions or precautions. But that's it. And they go on to say, like, regular physical activity during pregnancy improves or maintains physical fitness, helps with weight management, reduce the risk of gestational diabetes, and enhances physiologic well-being. And I think that's the main point that we're getting at. All of the physiologic benefits that we know come from aerobic exercise, strength training, and, you know, just being active outside, moving in general.
And, you know, I would encourage you to go listen to episode 359 with Dr. Christina Previtt, who's another physio, who talked through why the guide or the recommendations for so long were not to lift more than 20 pounds, like where that really came from in a study. But it's so old and it's so misleading in terms of why, you know, it was said in the first place that it should not be used anymore.
Because it was essentially from people who work like industrial or labor jobs.
I want them to go listen to the episode.
Yeah. Much different doing that type of work for 8 to 10 hours a day versus exercising or getting your exercise in for 20 to 30 minutes a day.
Exactly. It's just so different. And and I think what's cool, so I learned this actually from Mama Stay Fit has a great childbirth course that I actually took. And so I kind of pulled some nuggets from there. But there's extra blood that increases the flow of nutrients and oxygen to the baby to help move metabolic waste away from the baby. And if you exercise, your blood volume will be even higher to help, again, with this movement of metabolic waste away from your baby. So doesn't that sound great? We become more efficient at breathing. So when we exercise, our breathing muscles get stronger, and that helps us to breathe easier. And during pregnancy, we actually get more efficient at our oxygen carbon dioxide exchange. And this is important because as pregnancy progresses, like we talked about, our diaphragm becomes restricted and we can't take quite as deep of a breath as we could before. So we need to be super efficient at breathing to overcome this issue. And in addition, our VO2 max increases fairly significantly throughout pregnancy, and you may notice it maintain an elevated performance level well into postpartum. And then the last point I want to bring up from them is that the placenta's functional capacity seems to be developed during the first half of pregnancy. And if we can maintain or increase our volume of exercise, not necessarily the intensity, but increase the volume of exercise, our placenta tends to be more voluminous and have a larger functional capacity, meaning that our placenta can work better and more efficient for our body, which is all incredible, right? Like, this would make you want to be like, okay, let me go out and work out. I'm encouraged because I hear so many positives for me and baby.
And I want a voluminous placenta. I just, funny word, voluminous. So yeah, this is just us outlining basically all of the physiologic benefits of exercise.
Yeah.
And there are countless studies that show how beneficial exercises can be just for low back pain in general. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to find specific studies on exercise, its impact on low back pain and pregnant women. And that mostly has to do with getting studies approved on pregnant women, finding good sample sizes and cohorts that can do these studies, getting them approved for the ethical review boards. Take that for what it is. Exercise is beneficial. Exercise is beneficial in many capacities for the health of the baby, for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, for pains, yes, that you're feeling in your low back, pelvis. We mentioned gestational diabetes, the health of the placenta, oxygen exchange, our efficiency with breathing. So many benefits. And I really want us, and I think we are starting to see a slight paradigm shift and migration, treating pregnancy like we treat any other surgery, medical issue, condition. It's like when we're thinking about giving somebody a heart surgery or a major heart surgery, major back surgery condition, they're doing all sorts of prehab and exercise mm-hmm. coming up to it. Mm-hmm. And up until recently, we haven't seen that reflected in the recommendations for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You know, when we know it's happening, we know it's going to happen, and we know that people now we know that people need to recover and have a good rehabilitation program after delivery.
Yeah.
And so having the guidelines reflect that is so important.
Yeah. And there was a study that we looked at from, this is 2018, and it just says, you know, compared with not exercising, prenatal exercise decreased the severity of low back pain, pelvic girdle pain, and low back pain postpartum during and following pregnancy, but did not decrease the odds of any of these conditions at any point. Meaning, we can't say that, you know, when you exercise, you're going to prevent all of these pains. However, mm-hmm. If we can decrease the severity and allow you to function, and that's what's so important. I had one of my best friends all throughout her pregnancy, she had severe pelvic girdle pain. And she saw chiropractors, massage therapists, pelvic floor PTs. But the number one thing that helped her function every single day was exercising. She noticed if she did not exercise, she had more pain and more dysfunction within her body. And so she had to work out just because she had pain. And again, this didn't take away the pain, but it allowed her to function and feel less pain throughout the day so she could actually do her daily activities and help support her body postpartum, because postpartum is tough. You're bending down, you're lifting a baby, you're caring for a baby, you're doing so much postpartum. Think of, you know, the strollers and getting those open and closed and loading into cars and car seats and all these things. You have to be strong when you're a mom. Yeah. So I just can't imagine, you know, it's not worth having the pain and doing nothing. It's much better to at least do something that can help you be functional and feel stronger, if not for now, for after.
And both in that friend's example and in this study, it shows that the two options, at least in the study or for our friend, was move and exercise every day and have less pain and mm-hmm. feel like I can function a little better, or don't move or exercise and have more pain. Mm-hmm. And so people will say, because you'll hear this, oh, I do exercise and I still feel pain. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that could be a reality.
Yeah.
The alternative is if you don't move, you potentially will have more pain. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's important to keep in mind. This isn't a fix like, hey, I'm going to exercise and pain's going to be gone. No, you're just setting up your body, like you said, for afterwards. Mm-hmm. The more that we set that base and foundation of general fitness and strength prior to birth and delivery, the more of a platform we have to return to in our rehab and recovery afterwards. And I think the final thing that we want to bring up is what you brought up earlier about the anterior pelvic tilt, mm-hmm. and how that can result in us wanting to waddle a little more, especially as we get into the later phases of pregnancy, and developing a little bit of an awareness around that. If you are doing strength training, if you are going on regular walks and stuff, that itself could help you become significantly more aware without even noticing it, just mm-hmm. because you're doing regular movements that are going to engage your core. But there's always this discussion around, oh, can I do core exercises when I'm pregnant, when I have a growing belly? Or some people are nervous about getting more of that diastasis recti. Mm-hmm. I can't do core exercises because I'm going to have more diastasis recti. We also talk about that in episode 359 with Christina Previtt.
Yeah.
She talks a lot about that discussion around diastasis recti and how she's almost gone to the other end of the spectrum, saying like, we have no evidence that shows doing exercise increases diastasis recti, or doing core exercises, or even doing crunches, you know, increases diastasis recti. But in our minds, like, if you're doing the core exercises, if you're doing crunches or whatever it is, it's going to help, again, give you that foundation of core strength for postpartum. And there was one study, I don't know if you have that pulled up, that we looked at mm-hmm. that showed.
Yeah. So we looked at a study, pregnant women may exercise both abdominal and pelvic floor muscles during pregnancy without increasing diastasis recti abdominis. And we also talked about the myths and facts of diastasis recti a little bit in more detail with Anthony Lowe in episode 317. So if this is something you want to understand about the myths and facts that are said and what exercises you can and cannot do, that would be a really good one. You know, the reality is, like Dom said, reiterating, we just don't have the evidence to show, okay, if I'm going to sit up, or if I'm going to do, if I'm not just going to log roll every single time to get up, but I'm going to actually sit up, I'm going to crunch, I'm going to use my abdominal muscles, that is going to increase diastasis recti. Mm-hmm. So I mean, what you want to look out for in general, what I tend to look out for myself is that, am I coning and doming a lot? Like, I just want to know where my pressure is going. I already have a ton of pressure going out onto my belly. So if I can help to balance those pressures a little bit more with my back muscles, with my transverse abdominis, with my pelvic floor, well, then I just feel better supported overall in my trunk. Yeah. So personally, I don't want to see a lot of coning and doming in my abdominals. Like, how can I modify? How can I change my positioning so that I feel the muscles I want to work and I feel more engaged throughout my entire core? So personally, not because it's research related, like that is where I feel most supported.
Yeah.
But a large, you know, percentage of your persistence of diastasis recti, because we are going to get that stretching of linea alba, that tissue between the rectus abdominal muscle that causes that diastasis recti, that is normal and that is positive. That's amazing ability of our body to stretch in that way to make room for a baby. So that's you're going to have diastasis recti throughout pregnancy. Now, is it going to persist? And, you know, most diastasis recti abdominis have a spontaneous resolution, but 33% have persistent diastasis postpartum, 12 months postpartum. Now, this is largely due to genetics, you know, not necessarily what exercises you did or did not do during pregnancy. So I think that's important to remember. Like, first of all, the gapping is normal. Second of all, many will have resolution without doing anything. And third, it's genetic. So it's not necessarily what you're doing for exercise.
Yeah.
I just like to feel more balanced throughout my trunk and core because it helps to support my back, my hips, my pelvis when I'm doing exercise. So I just feel better supported overall.
I love that about you. And I think that's, I love how you're, throughout that whole answer, you're saying, like, I personally feel most supported. Because if you listen to our episode with Christina, when she talks about working with people during pregnancy, again, I'm sure in her mind, she ideally would want people to have that balance and that control. But she's like, if I see coning and doming, does it concern me?
No.
You know, I think that because you have such good awareness of your body, you're able to make the adjustments needed to have that and still be working on the core. And you're also strength training. So you're also doing a lot of the other things as well that are going to best help you create that strong foundation.
And I'm still doing HIIT workouts.
And still doing HIIT workouts that you handle better than I do, arguably, even when you're pregnant. And so, core training. The main reason we want to bring that up in relation to that anterior pelvic tilt is developing that awareness. Mm-hmm. Like, how, when you're doing core training, can you develop the awareness of what your pelvis is doing? And if you can, to some degree, control. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think develop a dynamic awareness of what your pelvis is doing when you're walking, when you're doing different activities, so you're not just always completely dumping forward into that extreme anterior pelvic tilt.
And this is why it's so important to not only be doing exercises in one motion, right? Like just lunges and just back. Squats.
Yeah.
And just, you know, we want to go side to side. We want to do single leg exercises, especially pregnant. Like you want to do single leg exercises. It just helps to support the whole pelvis and what you're feeling. And I personally follow the full body low impact plan. I'm now on phase two currently while we're speaking and recording this podcast. I have a girlfriend who's postpartum and doing it with me. So it's fun to be in like pregnancy postpartum phases and be following the same plan and feeling supported within our bodies. And so this is something that, you know, if you do want something to follow, there are going to be modifications as the belly grows because it just takes up space and room. So sometimes stances need to change. Like I said, sometimes I don't do push-ups on the floor. I elevate them or, you know, core work. If I start to feel like I'm coning a lot in my abdominal region, then maybe I modify to sitting instead of laying on my back or and I'm doing marches.
You to lay on your belly. You know, you're going to modify those.
I sit onto like the bench and I lean forward. And so I can still do a lot of exercises for my upper body in a, like I'm parallel to the floor without being belly on the floor. So there's a lot of ways that you can modify. If you need to reach out during any point and you want to try the full body low impact plan, I'd highly recommend it. I'm always available for questions if you're like, I feel like I need to modify this, or is there a modification for this exercise? Like, I'm available. So it's a great one, and it helped support me last pregnancy, and it's supporting my body this pregnancy.
And it's a 3-month plan. If you do it every day and go all the way through, there's 3 phases that are 30 days each. Again, like you said, you're available, I'm available. If you reach out through our email, ask about modifications for certain stages of pregnancy, we do our best to get back to everybody. There's a free week trial. We'll have that linked up in the show notes. It's just jen.health/free-trial.
Low impact.
Or low impact. Yeah, it takes you right to the low impact page so you can learn a lot more about the low impact plan she was just talking about. And our podcast listeners, you can always use code OPTIMAL to then get a discount on your first month or first year of the subscription. And yeah, just to recap, like, movement is good. And especially during pregnancy, we want to get the information out there that movement is necessary. It's recommended. Of course, you're going to be seeing a doctor throughout pregnancy and can ask about modifications. If you're a part of our community, you can always ask us about modifications for exercise.
Your OB is probably not, I just want to say, your OB is probably not the best to ask for modifications. So if you have a fitness coach that specializes in pregnancy, or a physical therapist you can see, I would recommend that.
I often just say that more so for the legal aspect of, like, supposed to talk to your OB. but
not for specific exercises.
And again, if you have the OB that's saying you're not supposed to lift more than 20 pounds, push back on that and say, aren't the current guidelines that I should be doing moderate intensity exercise,
especially five times a week? Already doing that.
And yeah, by the way, I already was doing this and was doing heavy strength training and running, or whatever it is. Push back on that. And if they continue to push back on you, like, say, I don't know if this is going to be a good partnership.
Yeah.
And I know,
or you could bring in the studies to
yeah, show that. And I don't know if not everyone has the ability to just change OBs depending on where you are in the country or what type of access you have to OBGYNs. But finding that person who's going to help you and help support you through your pregnancy the way that you want to be supported is paramount. And this is our little plug that exercise is good, aerobic, strength, working on the core, all good things to set up your foundation so you can have the most successful delivery and birth and postpartum recovery phase.
Thanks so much for joining us on another episode. I hope that was beneficial. And please pass this along to anyone who is currently pregnant or going to become pregnant or even postpartum. This is so much good information to hopefully encourage people on what's possible. And of course, if you want to check out the full body low impact plan, we're going to have that linked up. That's just jen.health/low-impact. And that will get you straight into that free week trial. And we'll see you next time on another episode.